This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Morning.
Kenny! Who calls a balk in 2024?
You want to power rank your favorite balks?
Well, somebody reminded me of a walk-off that the Guardians had as Drupal Cabrera walked
it
off.
That's right.
Like 7-8 years ago or something like that. I'm like, well, that's clearly my favorite, so there you go. And I figured, well, I guess, like Joy on Twitter, she listens, she lives out in California. Great listener. And she sent it to me, and I went, wow. And I went, well, I guess we had to pay the fiddler at some point, and here we are. It was a weird, weird call last night. So the Guardians played Boston last night. By the way, time of the game, 1 hour, 49 minutes.
My kind of baseball
that
game.
That was outstanding.
Especially with playoffs, NBA last night, I'm like, boom, done. Obviously would have liked the game to get extended and innings and maybe win that game. But I'm like, we've won a lot of games this year.
Let me flip over
to the playoffs.
It was great. I mean, it sucks that they lost. But I got to tell you, though, I had to respect it because it wasn't that they lost. The balk call was garbage. I'm going to get back to that in a second. But the opposing pitcher, Tanner Houck, was so good. I'm like, I can respect this performance. He was so good last night. I'm like, this is a... He was terrible the night before, or the outing he had before against the Angels. And I'm going, well, he's a pretty good pitcher. Let's see how it goes. And my God, was he good last night. So I'm like, all right, you know what? You went down against a great performance. It's the way she goes. Okay, fine. And then I'm just thinking about that balk call the entire time because I'm going, hey, you know, Ben Lively had a pretty good outing too.
He was great.
Gave up a solo shot. That was about it. But I still don't understand the balk call.
No.
And I don't think, but that's my point. I don't think anybody understands the balk calls. I don't think anybody understands balk. I honestly thought that balk is really something that Little League baseball managers start yelling about from the dugout. Like, that's what I always think that balks are. I'm sure Mitch, in his experience, umpire, I mean, how many guys, while you've been umpiring, Mitch, have been yelling about balks?
Especially not at the major league level, no. And my level, it's only about 2 or 3.
At a lower level, this comes up all the time because...
I think it comes up constantly.
Yes, it does.
Constantly. When I umpired back in the day, now I was never a big OHSAA umpire like you, even though I ended up in some high school games some way, somehow, but I think we'll keep that on the hush-hush years later. There was always hearing some guy, balk, balk, that's a balk, guys, that's a balk. He's balking, it's a balk. And we're going, I'm not doing that.
I always laughed at, what was the point?
I'm not writing
Kenny,
parking tickets here.
What was the point of the balk? What was always the intent of the balk?
So
it was so that you couldn't deceive the runners,
yeah,
right?
Even though, like, it's a lot of people pointed out, Nestor Cortez is up there doing the whole Mr. Burns on third base and the Daryl Strawberry episode, like,
he's
pitching, and somehow that's not a balk.
We've played him. We've just gone up against him.
Yes.
He does a fake. You can watch these videos. He even does a fake throwing motion before he throws it at times.
Unbelievable.
Just as a goof. And I kind of like it as a throwback. Like, that is, to me, such a throwback to baseball from a different time. And when we were growing up.
There are people paying hundreds of dollars to see the Savannah Bananas do that stuff.
Yes. I have.
Yes, exactly. Right. I got locked out, by the way. I couldn't get in the lottery.
Maybe next year.
For the Savannah Bananas. Sarah's not happy. Now she's asking me to use favors. And I'm like, I try to use one favor a year for an event, and I have to use it for the Savannah Bananas.
I'll tell you right now, Savannah Banana jerseys, like the style and everything, big on the Little League circuit.
Bigger than Caitlin Clark?
Yes. Hold on that. I know you want to get to that. We'll do that at 6:40. Oh yeah. But I do have the revised code, the Major League Baseball revised code of this.
Thank you.
Do you want to play the audio first of Vogt and Ben Lively and then get to the revised code?
Well, wait, just to...
Or do you want me to read the revised code first?
Before we get to it...
It is tedious.
We were going over what was the point of the balk. You were an umpire. I was an umpire. Mitch is an umpire trying to get gigs. What was the point of the rule to begin with?
To not throw off... Like, once you're set, not throw off the batter. Like, honestly, like... I said the same, and maybe Mitch was different. I'm sure Mitch was. Like, I swear to God, I'd turn around and look at the guy and go, we're not doing parking tickets today, guys. Like, he's set. He's come set. We're going. I'm not doing this. Because I just think you're messing with pitchers then if you're doing that. Like, you're set to me. Let's go. Throw the damn ball. Let's get the hell out of here before 8 o'clock. Come on. And then they get upset about it. But then again, you know, I only had to throw out a couple of guys during my illustrious 12 years as being an umpire. Thank you very much. I know. But I'm like, we're not doing this. And so when I see a balk, I'm like, who calls a balk in 2024 anymore? But apparently there is a rule. You want me to play the audio first? Let's play the audio first, and I'll get to the tedium of the call. Here's Stephen Vogt on the balk call on Ben Lively that happened last night that led to the first run of a 2-0 loss.
They changed the rule this year that you have to declare whether you're going from the windup or stretch. He did not declare with the new hitter, and evidently that's the new rule. I didn't like it. I understand that's the rule, but we didn't get that explanation. No excuse. We just need to declare every hit. They assume that you're going from the stretch unless you otherwise declare, even though it looked the exact same as the hitter before. But that's the rule, so we learned.
He said a rule this year. What I found was... that this was created 7 years ago because of David Price, whose pitching windup was nearly identical to his setup from the stretch. A lack of distinction between the two motions caused confusion for base runners.
Good God.
Which is why MLB, because you were talking about the batters. Mm. This is one about the base runners. So they MLB began asking pitchers with unclear motions to declare.
I do declare. Oh, yes, sir, God Almighty. Yes. Slap my ass and call me Sally Jesse Raphael. I do declare I will be pitching from the windup. You want to play the Ben Lively?
I want to hear you do that Sally Jesse Raphael line again.
Oh,
yeah.
You,
I mean,
you record it?
I felt like I said something, but it happens. It's okay.
Okay. Yeah, he clearly didn't say it. Like, he did not declare, sir.
We were all totally confused.
He did
obviously.
Not demand satisfaction.
And I think the average fan does not know to begin with, other than the obvious, which is you're set, you've come to that still position, and you have to follow through towards the plate. Like, you can't step here, throw there. That was always one of the obvious tells of the balk when I was younger.
Yeah, his windup, he's more... turn towards third base like you would be from the stretch, and his front foot is to the side instead of straight out in front of him.
They call it the hybrid stance.
Yeah,
tell
I've
us
seen
more.
It a ton.
Tell
it's,
us more about feel, the hybrid.
Feels
so
like
our,
the crab
all
dribble.
All our vehicles are going hybrid. What about our pitcher stances?
I mean, with the pivot foot being parallel to the pitching rubber and his non-pivot foot just to the side, that's essentially the hybrid position. And if he wants to be in the windup, he must declare that he's using the windup.
He
otherwise,
must declare,
yeah.
Sir, yes.
How must he declare?
I think you have to, like, make a gesture to the umpire, like, say to the umpire, like, hey, going into the windup. I think you have to make it obvious from what I've seen.
Well, first, FDR has to go to the podium, and then.
Now, does the umpire have to acknowledge?
I don't know.
Mitch, have you ever had to go... I give you credit for your now stretch.
I have not. We've had issues with the hybrid position over the last year or two, so we're still trying. I think it's still being figured out at my level, but at Major League Baseball.
It's still being figured out. You need to know, sir.
I do know.
Police of the field. It doesn't sound like you do. You just said you did, but it doesn't sound like you do when you said, I know, but then you started with, we're still trying to figure out. So which one is it? I need a rule. I need to not just try to figure it out.
From what I've seen, the high school rule, it's not allowed, the hybrid position. But Major League Baseball and NCAA, they have this similar rule that you have to declare whether it's windup or stretch.
According to the official baseball rule 5.07A2, A pitcher will be permitted to notify the umpire that he is pitching from the windup position within an at-bat only in the event of I, which is one, a substitution by the offensive team, or two eyes, immediately upon the advancement of one or more runners, i.e. after one or more base runners advance, but before the delivery of the next pitch. Well, it's clear there. I mean, hell, right?
There yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here watching this on repeat. I don't know.
He didn't declare. You got to declare, man. And clearly, you know, there you go. That's what happens to poor Ben Lively.
But otherwise.
Otherwise, good outing.
Yeah, I thought his stuff was pretty good, right?
Yeah. Other than that, it was a good outing. Good outing. So there you go. 149 game time. I enjoy.
Would have been even quicker without the balk.
It would have been like 148.
Oh, that's good. They did talk about that for a minute.
That was, yeah.
Well, they were like.
We would have got that in there.
On the broadcast, they were.
140, maybe.
Did they ever get clarification on the broadcast?
Because,
like, later in the game, Underwood was like, ah, we still don't even know. And so I don't think they got any sort of clear clarification on it. On what exactly had transpired last night on that one. So, I don't know. But either way, 12-6 is still a good record. That's still fine. You have any other opinions on this game last night? I know you switched over to the basketball.
No, yeah. Kwan had his hit streak snapped. It'd been 8 games. I love the bounce back this year by Stephen Kwan because we were thinking 2 years ago that this guy was Ichiro. I mean, he could slap the ball around at any point. You could not get a ball past him. And then last year,
Batting .372 last
night.
Yeah,
all those metrics last year were starting to go in the wrong direction. You're like, oh, it's they got the book on him now. The pitchers have grown accustomed, especially the ones that have seen him in division. And this year, he has come out firing. It's like he has made the adjustments. And that's how you know this guy is going to be really good for a long time, is that he's been able to do that. So yesterday it snapped, but it just reinforced just how good he's been and how good I think he can be this year, how important he is to that lineup.
Yeah, you know, it's a. I think that when he started talking about trying to hit for more power, like I didn't know what he meant by that, but you're hearing about, because I think when we hear power, we hear home runs. And this is because you got to give credit where it's due, because anytime they go into a slump, and they'll go into a slump, it's a Major League Baseball team, they all do it, and they do it more than once in a season. But when they go into a slump, we like to go after hitting coaches and say all types of nasty things about hitting coaches. You know my whole feeling about it. I go, midseason, does it really fix anything when you make that sort of a switch midseason? And Chris Valleca a couple years ago, even last year, caught a lot of hell. And I do think, now, there's a lot going on here. I don't want to make it sound like I'm throwing Terry Francona under the bus, but it's going to kind of sound like I'm throwing Terry Francona under the bus. Like, you hear how he talks when they do get a chance, because, I mean, he's just the hitting coach, so it's not like they get a chance to talk to him before and after every game like they do Stephen Vogt. But when I hear on the broadcast, both, you know, TV and radio, where it's like, hey, like, last year it was more, we're just happy to get somebody on base or get a bat on the ball, where this year we're trying to be aggressive. You know, a strikeout is not the worst thing in the world, where before it was. Like, okay, what happened in the strikeout? What did you do in the first two strikes? Like, there's a lot of stuff. And then there's emphasis on driving the ball. And that, I think that's what Stephen Kwan's talking about when he's talking about hitting for more power, like getting it out in front, driving the ball, trying to get it to the alley, and trying to get, hey, if you get a single, you get a single. You're a leadoff hitter. That's great. You got speed. You can get on base. You can hit the ball. That's great. But can we make it a double? Can we do some more things? Now, it's early in the season, and I think he has, what, 2 home runs, so it's not like he's Albert Bell out there, for crying out loud. But I think that that's part of the conversation. And so I have to go back and go, all right, were we a little bit too conservative over the last couple of years? You know what I mean? Like, when things start out so good, you sit there and go, well, there's a lot of young guys on this squad too. Why is that? So I don't want it to sound like I'm all of a sudden turning my back on Terry Francona and what I did. We carried a lot of water in this show for Terry Francona for a long time.
He earned it.
And he earned it for that. However, I'm looking at this, I go, this is a different type of feeling here.
Well, I do think what happens is, and this happens when you, like, get new coordinators in the NFL, you take all the good about your situation, and then you say, and the new coordinator is going to change everything. We're doing that with the offense, by the way, obviously. We are talking about that with the Browns. Oh, Van Pelt's out. So anything that was a problem with the offense,
yeah,
we've got a guy to
you
come
know
in
what?
And save
it's
it.
That's a good point. Like, so, if Watson throws really, really well at the beginning of the year, it's like, well, had to be Van Pelt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We love to do that. You're so
look
right.
Look at Ken Dorsey. Look at what they're doing, especially play calling changes, too. So in baseball with the Guardians, they've been a really good team, obviously, under Tito. So now we assume as fans that we're keeping all the good of Tito, and now we're adding this new bonus feature. Yeah, aggressiveness. We'll see if it stands the test of time. I'm liking what I'm seeing early on, obviously, and it seems like these guys have bought in very early. But remember, never forget, the magic of Tito was being able to manage that over the course of 162. And we're very hopeful that Vogt, being a recent baseball player, is going to understand all that and make sure to hit all those markers that Tito was able to hit with his clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Easier said than done. Tito's don't fall off the tree like that.
I mean, the Tito's don't fall far from the tree. That might be funny. All right, coming up at 8:20 this morning, Mary Kay Cabot going to join us on the show. We'll obviously talk about the Browns and the draft with her. However, 6:40, that's a kind of an odd thing to say to anybody, let alone Caitlin Clark. That coming up then. However, next, did the Cavs overthink it Sunday? Last night's results with the Sixers might have said yes. Ken Carmen, Anthony Lima, take us with you to work in the free Odyssey app.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Well, as we went over in the opening segment, it was a very, very quick Major League Baseball game. I didn't get your thoughts, Kenny, because we weren't talking about the speed of play as much as we did a year ago. Hour 49 yesterday, the Guardians went down to the Red Sox in that shutout, 2-0. Hour 49. Do you feel if you pay for a ticket, not just given a ticket for free or anything like that, if you pay for a ticket, do you feel gypped with an hour 49? I guess if you're a Red Sox fan, you won.
No, because, again, we always did, like, the good old days, we made that argument. And remember, I went through the 1948 season when the Indians won the World Series.
You and
I was
the
giving,
schedule game.
And there was, like, how many games were there inside of 2 hours? It was like 15
was
or 16
they
games.
They didn't have TV time.
Yeah, there were a lot of games that were inside of 2 hours. Most of them were like two and a half.
There's
like
no review.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, you're saving an hour.
Yeah.
So, we hearken back to the quote-unquote good old days, but it's like, hey, man, like, you kind of got to get it moving along. And now I think a lot of people are like, hey, you know, in, out, a little
I
bit
like
of time
quick
here.
Games. Yeah. I like quick games on the weeknights. Even if I paid to go the weeknights, let's do it.
Yeah,
on the weekends, still kind of want my extra time.
Yeah, you're right. On the weekend, I think you're okay with the longer games.
We should do weekend no clock.
Boy, that's a great idea.
I'm kidding. I'm joking. No, that's a joke.
Is there merit to that? If you're only playing one game,
it's
and it's the weekend, and it's
you
the
you
middle.
You have weekend pitchers and weekday pitchers.
Yes,
no,
and
guy.
In the middle of summer, you want more bang for your buck.
Well, I'm a weekend DH. I don't DH during the week.
It's professional baseball. Let's not make it too gimmicky
I'm
for
just
crying
saying,
out loud.
They've been very progressive. But they're open to change.
It's called progressive field. I mean, come on. I've seen the signs.
How do you know that?
Wasn't attendance up last year in the league?
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that part of the reason is I think you feel that when you go to the ballpark, now you're going to see a conclusion where before you didn't know.
You didn't know. Absolutely.
And it's like, we got to get out of here in the seventh inning or something like that. People got more things to do. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with golf. You and I were talking about it on the phone a couple of days ago, and you kind of asked me, like, God, 20% dip in ratings for the Masters.
Plummeted.
And I had my reasoning for it, and you said, nah, Ken, I think it's a simple. I love Ken, what do you feel? Let me give this long thing answer. Nah, Ken, I don't think it's that hard. I think it's that people don't have time to play 18 holes of golf anymore, so they're just going to the simulator. Now I'm like, well, I guess so.
Although
I guess,
you're
right.
You were out at the Valley the other day.
And I was there for about 45 minutes and left.
But you were at the simulator.
And I was on the simulator. He offered to go out.
And
I'm like,
beautiful course.
Yeah.
And it was a nice day. Hey, let's go inside.
They go, Ken, you don't want to go? I go, nope, I got to go. We got too much to do. So quite literally 37 years old, I am the audience you were talking about, Anthony.
We'll get to some Cavs sound here in a second from yesterday as they're getting ready for their first-round playoff series against the Magic. Last night, the two teams that we were alleged to have ducked, the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers, went right down to the wire. 76ers held off Miami 105-104. Playoff Jimmy did get banged up in that game and looks like he might have done something to his MCL. He looked like his season was over like in the first quarter. But he was able to stick it out, but was limping through much of the second half. And Joel Embiid took him a while to...
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Kind of get his bearings in that game, but did finish with 23 points, had 15 rebounds, had some big plays down the stretch both on offense and defense. So the 76ers have now claimed that number 7 seed. Miami has to keep playing. Not sure if they're going to have Butler, but we had Chicago defeat Atlanta 131-116 in that second game. I don't know how much you were able to watch of Miami and Philly.
Honestly, very, very little.
Yeah, I did see a lot of response on social media. We're ducking these teams.
Well, honestly, I was watching Guardians only, and then I looked at my phone, and I started to get people going, you guys got to hammer the Cavs tomorrow for ducking this garbage. And I clicked over, and I was like, well, I guess I better start watching this a little bit. So I'm trying to watch two things at once. Then I just went back to the Gardos. I went back and watched this, and Jimmy Butler got hurt.
Problem is they're playing each other. And, so I don't know how to have that kind of takeaway. It's like when I'm watching the SEC teams in a game, and I'm sitting here trying to prop up the Big Ten over the years. And I'm like, look at these teams. They're not that good, but they're playing each other.
Can I guarantee that Jimmy Butler would have gotten hurt then? I don't know. So, listen, I thought it was a bad look for you to do what you did, but you did what you did. Ultimately, do I think it's a smarter play? If you are only trying to win one series, which is what they're trying to do, then yes, it's a smarter play. But I stand by what I've said over the last 3 days, and I just don't need to say it anymore about I agree with everybody else about how they went about it, because when you make those sort of moves, you should dream bigger.
Yesterday in Independence, Cavs get ready for that matchup. Donovan Mitchell, so much about how he's feeling and the health of his knees and his whole body. He was asked how he's feeling.
Good. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm 100%. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
100%.
And I don't believe him.
If you see him.
I don't believe him.
If you see him. I tell you, he had a glow yesterday. He had a glow to his face.
Some call it the 100% glow.
I think he at least he believed it in that moment that he's feeling 100%. And also talked about, after what happened last year, the chip on his shoulder.
Being here is the bare minimum for this group. This is who we are, the lowest. You know, I think that's kind of, we all expected that. I think we don't get guys like Max Strus and George Nyang to sign a free agency, Tristan Thompson, Marcus Morris, if they don't believe that we can do something. I think we all believe in ourselves. So we always have a chip on our shoulder, regardless of whether the 1 seed, the 10 seed, whatever. But, you know, for us, this is where we expect to be. And now we got to go out there and handle business.
We're all having conversations about the expectations for the Cavs, but Donovan Mitchell is making it very clear what his expectations are. He believes that this is a Cavs team that can make a run and that can seriously contend. I know it doesn't look like that based on how they played after the All-Star break, but a lot of it's because of him, because of his injury.
Yeah.
Not necessarily anything.
Well, they can't, without him on the floor, I don't think anybody has any confidence in them. So that's going to take its toll, certainly. So, yeah, he needs to be on the floor. You need your superstar on the floor to have yourself a chance. And all I can say is, I mean, Lloyd told us last week, and I think it's true, and you better have him on the floor, because it's going to save, it might save a lot of jobs. Because if you don't, I mean, Dan might consider an entire house cleaning, and Donovan Mitchell might be thinking a lot differently, and I might be eating a lot of crow along with a lot of pizzas and a lot of feelings.
I do feel encouraged. The last time we saw him against Indiana, it kind of looked like old Donovan Mitchell. He was getting to the bucket, got to the foul line a little bit, seemed to have no limits on his burst. And then since then, he's had over a week of rest before Saturday's game at 1 o'clock. Finally, J.B. Bickerstaff has had to hear for an entire season about how soft his Cavs were against the Knicks. But what does he feel needs to change?
The physicality may change in the playoffs, but what teams' strengths are very rarely changes, if ever, in the playoffs, right? So Orlando is going to try to go to their strength. And you go back and you watch those four games. You watch, you know, them versus other opponents who may have had success versus them. And you figure out what those strengths are. And then you build your defense or offense the best to take those away.
Has JB been too soft on the Cavs?
Oh, throughout the.
You want me to show my work?
I was going to answer it and say,
oh.
Just based on his messaging, I think at times he's been a little soft.
Okay,
on
well, honestly, I was just trying to be sarcastic about something because I noticed that his voice is actually not raspy and going
away.
It's
playoff voice.
Yeah.
It's different.
That's true. Well, he hasn't.
I go, he's clearly not yelling at them as much or yelling at refs as much. Yes. So you try to make a joke, and sometimes it lands, and a lot of times it doesn't.
Well, a lot of people, especially we had David Thorpe on yesterday to break down the matchup, and he talked about the differences between this Magic team and maybe that Knicks team last year. Like, this team is going to be physical, especially at the point of attack. I mean, Jalen Suggs is going to harass your ball handlers. When Jonathan Isaac comes in, he is just going to be all over the place and get deflections and get blocks. But they're not a rebounding team like the Knicks were. You know, they're not just going to clear you out and gobble every single rebound. I think the Cavs might actually have an advantage there in this series. And this is one of the teams we can play Evan Mobley and Jared Allen together against and maybe have some success. Plus, they don't have a Jalen Brunson. They don't have a guy that is going to just seek out mismatches and take advantage from start to finish. You know, Banchero can do that at times, but he's not that far along in his career at being able to do that. Now, I know he's hoping to have a breakout series, just like we're hoping Mobley and Garland can have breakout series.
Oh, God, it'd be huge if he had a breakout series. I'd feel so much better. I mean, even if they went out there and they got beat by Boston, if Evan Mobley takes that next step, I will be feeling a lot better. That might be sounding like I'm bartering here, but that's the truth. Fantastic about last night. Coming up at 9:20 this morning, set your alarms. J.C. Sheldon, former Ohio State women's basketball guard and a new Dallas wing in the WNBA. She'll join us at 9:20. Coming up next, well, that's an odd thing to say to someone, Greg. Ken Carmen, Anthony Lima, live on The Fan. J.C. Sheldon, former Ohio State women's basketball guard, new Dallas wing and local product. Even though it says, you look up her Wikipedia, it says Dublin. And she will be calling from Dublin. Ohio, not Dublin, Ireland. That'd be something. She is from, obviously, she's born in Akron, if I'm not mistaken. And her father was the coach at BW? I think it was. And then became an athletic director, if I'm not mistaken. That's how I got it all figured out there. Either way, she's going to just, ask her. Coming up at 9:20 this morning, J.C. Sheldon. Make sure you take us with you to work on that free Odyssey app. So yesterday, Caitlin Clark, she had her introductory press conference with the Indiana Fever. And Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star, who's their premier columnist there, he kind of had a weird line of questioning. We have the audio here. Let's play it.
Hi, Caitlin. Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me, and we'll get along just fine. So.
Okay, so she makes a heart with her hands.
Yeah, anybody that's watched her at all has seen this.
Well, Meredith has stayed here for this, because there's a conversation of whether it's cringy or creepy or both or what it might be, and it comes off really weird. It comes off really, really odd here. So, Meredith, good morning.
Morning, Ken. Anthony.
We had a big discussion before this, and like, okay, we're a couple of guys. I thought it just came off really odd. Maybe pull that sentence back there if you can.
Yeah, so that was the first time I heard that audio.
Okay,
so
that's the first time.
I haven't heard that audio.
It was all over yesterday.
Yeah, I was not aware that was happening. That's gross. That was really, really gross.
So Lima, you know, we've had Greg Doyle on the station many times. He is he's an interesting fella. He is definitely offbeat. Definitely, what would you say, Tone? Weird? Would you call him a weirdo in a bit?
Oh, yeah. I've been at many event that Greg Doyle has done this type of stuff, which is get in a very awkward back and forth with an athlete, both college and pro.
Yes. And I think he's kind of gone for that a bit here in the past. Like, kind of like, all right, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to start something and it's going to be this way.
He's been my adult life. He was a national columnist. I remember he was CBS Sports. And he would do the off-the-beat stuff. Off-the-beat, you know, when I think about guys that kind of cover sports in a very different way than what everybody else is covering this story. He's going to the other side of the room to cover this story. He was always a really good national columnist, I thought, but he's been in Indy now for quite some time, so I haven't kept up with him. He used to do the radio rounds, used to be on the shows.
Yeah, it's and he hasn't been around for a long time, at least on this station. What did you think of the comments? When I heard him, I like, you make a face, you wince.
It is the cringiest. I almost wanted Owen to not play it after I started hearing it again.
Well, I have more audio.
Oh, you do? Please go right on ahead.
This was afterwards. So this was the rookie introduction press conference with the coach. I think Meredith used the word gross, and I think this can also be classified as gross. Here you go.
You just were given the keys to that. What are you going to do with it?
What am I going to do with them? Hopefully we're going to win a lot of games to start. She's going to help us out with that.
Jeez.
The laughter in the background from, I'm assuming, well, that was that the other reporters I think that, were, that were laughing? Or?
Oh, no,
I think they stole my laughter.
Yeah.
No, I think there were more than just reporters there. I think there were fans. I think there were employees
I kind of, did that not sound like awkward laugh? Like, oh, this is like trying to make it through it. You've heard me awkward laugh interviews before. And like, oh, okay.
I mean, you get what he's saying. He's like, you just signed up to coach what is the most valuable asset now. And
correct.
I hate to,
maybe
I hate,
in sports.
I hate to break it down, but if we were talking about Victor Wembanyama and Greg Popovich, you'd ask the same question. Like, you just got that. Like, how amazing is that?
I think this is after he just said what he said, so people are going to take it in a different way.
I don't think the keys comment is super gross. I do think that I don't understand the laughter unless it was, because there was a lot of people laughing. So unless it was like collective awkward laughter, is a possibility. But yeah, first one to Caitlin Clark was just, if I was Caitlin and like every press conference, I would avoid that man like the plague.
Well, clearly did he?
Well,
he
why? Do you think? Are you afraid of him? Like, what do you mean, avoid him like the plague?
Like,
he's a journalist asking silly questions.
I don't know that I would give him the same time or attention that I would give other reporters.
Now,
that makes sense.
He has since come out and written, man, he's written 3 Caitlin Clark columns in the last day. So you understand exactly what's going on here.
He knows what he
knows happening. What he's doing. Yeah. He knows everyone's going to read this column. In fact, they took off the paywall on this column. Doyle, Caitlin Clark, I'm so sorry. On Wednesday, I was part of the problem. And he goes to explain how he went through denial and anger on this. Like
denial and anger?
Yeah. He goes through and says, I gave her a signature, heart-shaped hand gesture. This is part of the denial part. Introducing myself, a welcoming her to town. I did this during a nationally televised press conference. What kind of idiot acts creepy on national television? He puts in parentheses, me. So he even fesses up to that he thinks he was creepy. I thought it was just more cringy than creepy. Like, at no point did I think he was, like, hitting on her or sexualizing her. Like, I thought the internet rushed to going to the creepy because I think the internet lumps everything
into... It comes off really, really poorly.
Cringy is what... I think there's a difference between cringy and creepy.
Well, she said gross.
Yeah, that was my immediate reaction was
gross. You didn't think he was hitting on her or sexualizing her, did you?
It's hard to tell, but...
Really? I think it's easy to tell. He was not doing any of those things.
Huh? Yeah, I don't know. So here's my advice for men everywhere. If it's not something that you would also say to a man, but you're going to say it to a woman, then it's creepy. Like, that's how you can classify creepy. Like, he wouldn't say that to, like... If he was at a Cavs press conference, he wouldn't say something like that to, like, Donovan Mitchell. If he like throws up like heart hands at Donovan and goes, "Oh, I hope you do that to me," or something. You
know, I told
like,
Ken before the show.
He wouldn't say that to him.
I do remember. I wouldn't, but that guy is Greg Doyle is.
And he goes
odd.
Over that.
He's
says,
an odd duck.
He says he's done these weird things.
I will tell you that.
It definitely is a him problem because he's done this. He talks about interactions
he's
had.
And he does
with,
it anyway.
He's had Chuck Pagano, Frank Reich. He goes over Carson Edwards, Zach Edey. He's like, I've definitely had these. He's like, I've treated the men like the women here. But then he goes into apologizing and how he didn't understand the ignorance of talking to a young woman. And this brings up the larger question. Do you have to talk to young women in a different way that you'd talk to a young athlete? Because I'm telling you that I remember this predates you. When LeBron was here in Cleveland, there were a lot of look at me journalists that covered LeBron. It was like,
that's true.
Hey, can we have a handshake? It's like, oh, that's very cringy, but that's not creepy. Nobody's worried about whether you're hitting on LeBron James or sexualizing him because you're treating him differently from other athletes. You're treating him differently because of this enormous enormous business story, which is what this is.
But there is a difference there because you were noticing the way that those journalists were trying to do that.
It was weird.
And so, yeah. And you're saying that's weird. So it's kind of in the same vein as what you're saying. Also, I can't see his face. So and if you don't know who Greg Doyle is, which a lot of people don't, I mean, he hasn't been on our station in years. Yeah. So a lot of people might not know who the hell Greg Doyle is. We haven't talked about Greg Doyle basically since when? Penn State? I mean, it's been a long time. So they don't remember Greg Doyle, or they don't know his face. They can't see his face. And so you just hear this guy from the corner.
She doesn't know.
She doesn't.
The important thing is to look at it from her perspective. I imagine, I mean, guys, I'm looking at my arms. The hairs are standing up when he's asking those questions. It is weird.
That is your, like, red flag-o-meter is going off.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a good thing that you have that. But if it was something that he was really, really, really well known for currently, I don't think it would have come off as gross as much, and it would have come off as cringy. But, like, let's take, like, Adam Sandler, for example. He does, like, this weird, like, baby talk thing. But everybody knows that he does that. That's like a signature thing. So if he goes and starts randomly doing that baby talk stuff that he did in like Billy Madison, no one's going to look at him cross-eyed because that's something that he's known for. So for this guy, if he hasn't been like a front-facing journalist for a while and people don't realize that that's just how he is, then it's going to come off as gross.
So it came off really bad.
So I'd love to know if this is going to be something like is the media world going to be walking on eggshells now because they've seen the reaction to this? Or can Caitlin Clark be treated just like a normal athlete? At what point is the human interest story, the amazing business story that she is, at what point will she be covered like a basketball player? Because clearly there, she's not being covered like a normal basketball player. I think we can all agree.
And I think that's what bothers some people. It's like, well, I mean, if she's supposed to change the way that we look at women's professional basketball here, and that's part of it, like, I think that that's what's kind of bothering some people. It's like, hey, man, we got to kind of get out of this silliness here after a minute, don't we? Like, if we're going to try to take it seriously, and he claims he wants to take it seriously, then we kind of got to stop assing off, don't we? And asking dumb questions like that and acting dumb like that. I think that that's part of it. I think there's a time and a place to be dumb. Obviously, I can know a time and a place to be dumb, but that's not the time or the place to act like an idiot. And it was a pretty idiotic thing to do. Coming up at 8:20 this morning, Mary Kay Cabot joins us on the show. Meredith, you joined us all throughout the morning because you're wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Coming up at 8:20, Mary Kay Cabot going to join us on the show.
Is that cringy or creepy there at the end from Ken?
That was more cringy.
Was it gross? I've never heard you say that with any other update person.
I say yes, because we don't have any other women
like that.
I say yes, ma'am.
Meredith, was that gross, cringy, creepy? What was that from Ken?
It was fine. It was not gross, cringy, or creepy.
Well, because you know Ken, right?
I say yes, ma'am, to you all the time.
Yeah, he does. It's not, like, again, it's something that Ken is known for. Therefore, it is not cringy, creepy, or weird.
Thank you. Yes, coworker. Thank you very much.
She said you're known for it. That's even
good
worse.
God, totally.
Saying ma'am is not a bad thing, Anthony. You're going to work me into
I say
this
yes,
morning.
Sir.
Never heard you say that to Jeff Thomas. I've never heard you, Jeff Thomas, sir, many times. I've never heard you throw that thing. By the way, Jeff Thomas will be here all morning, just making sure you know he can be on the show, too.
Jeff hasn't been on the show in 10 years, as well as the other individuals that we have on to do the updates. Meredith bothers to listen. Meredith will text me during segments of what we're talking about. Jeff hasn't listened for years.
I would like to throw up a hand signal because you guys have ran way over the
board. I'm sorry. At 9:20, J.C. Sheldon up next. Throw the first punch. It's the best way to win a playground fight or a playoff series.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.